The Breakfast Club.
Gorgeous colours across the skyline this morning, and I reckon Adam White's been sitting there just pondering life as he has a look at the magnificent colours. He's back again on a Monday morning. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. A very humid day expected today. These days of 30 plus continue. There's a real sequence going, isn't there? And it's going to continue for most of this week too.
Could be worse. Could be in Perth.
Yeah, the sequence is over 40.
40s. There's 7 40s in a row, isn't it?
Something yeah.
That's too hot. That's when the evaporative cooling starts to pop itself and it just becomes moisture in the air everywhere. It's just yuck.
Yeah.
It's just yuck when that happens.
I had a...
So the refrigeration's required as opposed to the evaporative cooling.
Yeah, so I caught up with a friend of mine on Friday who, like me, is obsessed with the Bureau of Meteorology.
And well, we've changed like, this.
Like me, my friend has some trust issues and really feels let down by the Bureau with the... their efforts over the last 12 months. And we're just talking about just the lack of rain that there has been. So if you just drive around, particularly the eastern suburbs, I think the western suburbs has actually got more than the east. The amount of it's just dead grass, you know, it's just so dry at the moment. It's quite remarkable. Because there just hasn't been rain.
No, there hasn't.
Because there was a wet spring.
It was very wet.
And
we were told it was going to be a very wet summer, too.
Exactly right. It was meant to be the...
Look! Massive big balloon.
Oh.
Massive one.
It's a very interesting reaction there.
Well, because it wasn't there.
Sounded like you're about seven.
20 seconds ago, I looked and there was nothing. And all of a sudden, I turned back and there's a massive big... There's another one. They're coming. They're dropping from everywhere. You know, I love the balloons.
Yes, I know.
Well, what a colour scheme the Melbourne skyline's giving us this morning. It's some fantastic colours. Reflection off the glass windows in the city and the big tall towers. Yeah, they're dropping from everywhere. Balloons. It's a great balloon morning.
Don't drop too low.
Well, there's four. I can see four right above us. Right above us.
Now,
can
you imagine if you went to the races yesterday and you had to phone someone to say, I need a lift home. And they said, why do you need a lift home? Have you had too much to drink? No, my car's been burnt to the ground.
I can't imagine that. I did
there was
see
20
it.
Of them.
I did see what happened at Great Western yesterday.
Absolutely extraordinary.
What was the origin of the fire?
I'm not entirely sure. I wouldn't mind getting someone on to talk about this. Now, maybe our Racing Pulse guys will do it themselves. But... it just did quite... Because initially the reports were that there was one car on fire. But there was 20 in the end.
It is believed a car with a hot catalytic converter parked over hay laid down on the ground triggered the inferno. Jenny Kennedy. If we get Jenny on, she's around. Avid Great Western Cup race girl. I'm not sure how we get hold of Jenny, but she quoted in the paper. Saw the smoke before a series of loud booms as fire engulfed the row of parked cars. Hmm. I did see some footage of someone getting in their car. The flame was pretty close to getting in their car and moving it. Oh, I would have probably just let the car go, I must admit.
Like, I've gone back to my car.
Five balloons!
Five. I've gone back to my, where at least where I thought my car was, only to find that I couldn't find my car and convinced that it had been stolen to the point where I almost rung the police. Only to find it in another location. But I've never gone back to my car to find it burnt.
No, I've never done that either. No, it's an unusual outcome to find your car burnt.
It would have been doubly worse if you'd lost on the punt, although admittedly it was after race one, so you might have had a bad start to the day and then lost your car.
It would be very scary.
Shouldn't laugh about that.
Very scary stuff. But all was under control. The CFA got involved, as they do, because they're a magnificent organisation. And they brought it under control as soon as they could there. But dramatic. Dramatic on a Sunday, watching all that unfold. So, yes, well done to the CFA for getting involved. Jeff Lovell, the Grampians Racing Manager. How about this? Here we go. We've got some audio. Was on Channel 9 last night having a chat about this incident yesterday.
These things are traumatic, absolutely traumatic. And what we saw today was horrific.
We saw people running everywhere. We saw caravans moving. We saw motorhomes moving. We saw everything. It's just, it was so much mayhem out there. I've been to a lot of race meetings. I've never seen that. And, you know, when you look at it, we're very, very lucky. Everybody survived. And sure, we'll live for another day.
You can't imagine you would have seen something like that before.
Well, yes. Dramatic scene just today for that meeting and for those people that lost their cars, we're thinking of you, but could have been a lot worse.
Yes. The other interesting thing I can't still get my head around, last night my favourite competition, the Big Bash, had its next final, a cutthroat final, of which the Strikers won. So they've now won 6 games in a row. Now they're down to the last 3. But the story of Ian Cobain,
yes,
a.k.a. Kurt Cobain, and not Ian Cockbane.
No, not Cockbane.
It's a silent CNK, which we talked about last week. I don't know too many names where you have 2 silent letters.
No, it's excessive.
So
what did Kurt get up to last night?
Kurt made 65 off 38 deliveries with 6 fours and 3 sixes, which helped get the Strikers over the line in a very dramatic game. It was probably the best game of the tournament, to be honest. But this is the guy that's playing local cricket.
Synthetic.
On the Mornington Peninsula. Now, admittedly, he plays for Gloucestershire, so we've got to put it into some level of context. But a guy that's been picked out of the local competition here in Victoria to play for the Strikers because he knew Dan Worrell, and has become one of the real finds of the tournament. And I don't know really what it means, whether it's a bad reflection on the Big Bash, a really good reflection on him, a bad reflection on list managers around the country that didn't have him in their teams initially. I don't know what it means.
Find him. He's hiding in the Mornington Peninsula pub somewhere through the afternoon, and all of a sudden he's around and he's making runs. Not easy to find these local blokes, you know. They're not easy to find.
Yeah, so last night on the MCG, a big final, admittedly the Strikers had started pretty well, but he continued it on, clearing the fence 3 times and, pivotal in their victory. It is remarkable.
I actually enjoyed watching Adelaide Batten last night. Carey Short, Cobain, Kurt Cobain. I liked watching them bat for a bit. I actually spent some time watching it.
And then how about on Friday night where the Sixers were playing the Scorchers with the winner of that going through to the grand final this Friday night? And all the controversy in the build-up to the game was the fact that Steve Smith wasn't allowed to play for the Sixers.
Yep.
And then to rub salt into the wounds, they lose Jack Edwards as one of their batsmen to COVID. And then Dan Hughes trips on the rope in a fielding drill before the game and hurts his ankle, and he's out of the game as well, just to add salt into the wounds that they couldn't play Smith. And they got absolutely belted by the Scorchers in that game. So, it was almost like the Sixers couldn't cope with the fact that they couldn't have Smith. Now, that obviously didn't contribute to the COVID or to the ankle injury, but they were 7 for 40 and absolutely no chance against the Scorchers.
Or the Scorchers are just too bloody good, which seems to be the case at this stage. What's your take on that? I mean, my take, it's not exactly exclusive, a lot of people's takes, was why the hell, in a competition that's seemingly paddling throughout the summer, wouldn't you allow Steve Smith, who had played for the Sixers before, in a compromised competition anyway, we've got players playing for multiple teams, for goodness sake. Why wouldn't you be allowed to get access to a guy like Steve Smith just for PR, let alone anything else? Why wouldn't you do that? Don't be giving me integrity, because there's no integrity in the competition at the moment because of the way it's had to be operated under the COVID situation. They've made do, and this would have been another way to make do and to add some spice to the competition, get interest, viewer interest, player interest, corporate interest, whatever it might be. And they said, no, you know what? It wasn't on the list. Come off it.
Well, look, they have played the integrity card, which is interesting considering the fact that, as you said, they've sort of made rules up on the run just to get the competition finished, really. But what had happened was all the CEOs had met and they went, no, you had the opportunity to name Smith on your list at the start of the competition. You chose not to. So even though you have a spare spot on your list, you've got to get someone from the player pool,
that's garbage,
of which Smith isn't part of, to be able to fill your list. You had your chance. You went and decided to go in another direction. Now, that meant that you could pay more for the players that were on your list as opposed to the ones that weren't, obviously. And Smith would have been an expensive operation. I think, in fairness to the Sixers, they thought there was no reason to have Smith on their books because under the way the season was supposed to run, he would have played all the test matches and then played the one-day matches, so he wouldn't have been available. Whereas in the case of both Head and Carey, who have come in for the final series, they were on the Sixers list because there was a likelihood certainly Head wouldn't be playing the one-day matches and Carey maybe not because of Matthew Wade. So that's why those two test players were able to play, because they were actually on the strikers list with the thought that they might have been able to play in the finals.
You haven't answered my question.
To answer my question is that the CEOs decided that they would play the integrity card and say, no, that's not part of the rules.
So if you were... Who's running the Big Bash these days? Is it?
Well, I think it's Alistair Dobson, you would say, would be the man. That's
so if you were Al Dobson, the boss of the Big Bash, what would you have done? Would you have made an executive decision to allow Stephen to play? SPD Smith?
Under normal circumstances, no, but these haven't been normal circumstances, so yes.
Right, okay, just checking. Did you know, just while I celebrate the arrival of the five balloons today, did you see page 5 of the paper today? Don't tell me that people aren't paying attention to what we talk about. Do not tell us that, because we're setting not only the sporting agenda, but the Melbourne City photography agenda as well. Page 5 of the paper, we've got a hot air balloon over the Holden Centre, and Amy Park and the MCG in the background with a little bit of Rod Laver floating through. They are telling us that they love the balloons as well. It's a beautiful shot.
It's an all-star mile balloon.
That is too. It is. I'd notice that. It's just a cool balloon. Mm. See, there you go. Balloons. Everyone loves them. Don't pretend you don't. Steve off the SMS. Is it Steve off the SMS? Wants to know what a collective noun is for balloons. Well, I would have thought balloons is the collective. Is it not?
Well, is it a bunch of balloons? Is it a something else of balloons? The collective would...
Oh, sorry, yes. The collective, yes. No, I don't know. It's probably a bunch. It's certainly a bunch when you got your birthday party. Those sort of balloons. You got a bunch of balloons, haven't you?
Yeah, don't know.
If you know the collective noun for hot air balloons, not just the birthday balloon, let us know. It's a glorious morning in Melbourne town. What did you say the temperature was going to be today, Waddy?
33.
It's pretty hot. That's pretty hot. You know what's happened? It's been so hot that my wife's a bandit for the solar heater for the pool. The pool was too hot yesterday. She just keeps it on. I like a little bit of chill in my pool, so I actually, because I'm really hot when I get into it.
Yeah.
I don't want to be sitting there and still steaming. It's like a spa bath. Well, I've turned it off.
We aren't fortunate enough to have a pool at our house, but my parents have a pool, so we took the kids over yesterday, and my parents' solar has broken because the cockatoos have chewed into the solar.
Have they?
Yes.
The cockies.
So it's had to have been turned off. So it was quite chilly getting into the pool yesterday.
I like a bit of chill in the pool. When it's really hot, you want a bit of chill in the pool. You want to have the whole moment, and then your body acclimatises.
Well, there was certainly that. But, yeah, cockatoos.
We'll have to have a chat to Rebecca.
The other thing that's annoyed me is that possums...
Just something else.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in my life at the moment. Possums have eaten my tomatoes and the sweet corn. They have aggressively attacked the husks of the sweet corn.
Have they?
But the tomatoes are a real issue.
What size were the tomatoes when they've been consumed by our friends?
Well, almost ready to pick. So now what I've had to do is the real old-fashioned way. I've gone and picked all the green tomatoes that hadn't been damaged by the possums.
They need to finish on the vine.
And put them on the windowsill and they ripen.
No, they need to finish on the vine.
No, they ripen on the windowsill.
I know they ripen, but it's not the same. They don't get the same photosynthesis and nutrition from the soil.
It's so demoralising to see you get out and to pick the tomatoes and they've been hacked at by possums.
Are you going to get some netting involved?
No, I did. I went to Bunnings yesterday and got some netting.
Here we go. I'm surprised it's taken so long for something to eat your vegetables and fruits, because tomato is, of course, a fruit.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it took so long. I would have thought that being an open-air situation, like yours has been. That they would have been eaten much more.
No,
than that.
It's really annoyed me.
Yeah. Well, you got your netting out now. Did you go? What sort of netting?
I don't know. Very important. Just went to Bunnings and got the netting. Went to the aisle and there it was.
How'd you go to Bunnings? Because that woman in Perth told us that we're in lockdown yesterday.
Yeah, I know. How'd that go down? Oh, bit of a setback.
Fair to say, there's a division in the country at the moment. Getting into near Midgillarias. We shouldn't do that. Craig's in Mount Martha. He's given us a call on the open line, 1-300-652-927. Good morning, Craig.
Morning, boys. Couple of things. Look, Whitey, just on the tomatoes, what you do is around the stakes, around the perimeter of the tomatoes, you actually put fishing line around there. And you know the little the ringing bells you put on the end of your fishing rod when you get a bite?
Oh, yeah.
You put three or four of those around it and they ring every time the possums go near it or any birds or whatever. So that keeps you awake at night, but that's it. A couple of quick things. I noticed our lawyer also got a little bit of a piece of one last week, still on the promo, is she?
Is that? Oh, yeah, that's your one, yeah, Helvoy. Yeah, we like that. Yeah, we like that. It's good for us because that was our early mail win, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, early mail and Griffo was all over that. And I was actually away last week and I sort of went away from the electronics, but I got in the Swan Reach pub and it was all over that. the Tambo, that was fantastic.
Magnificent. Magnificent.
Yeah, yeah, the last thing I wanted to mention is with this year's Australian Open, I don't like to be negative at all in my life, but do you think the winner's going to have an asterisk against in the men's if whoever wins without Novak being there?
I don't, Craig. I must admit, every year we have players that aren't at big tournaments across the calendar. So it's just one of those incidents where another big player is not there. Where Roger and Novak aren't there. But last year at some of the Grand Slams, Roger and Rafa weren't there. Like, it's just the way it is. Sometimes players miss. They're not robots, although Novak looks like one when he plays sometimes. they're not robots. I wouldn't think there's an asterisk, is there?
No, look, I know what you're saying, Craig, and I probably thought maybe that was the case before the tournament started. But as Daniel says, I mean, often key players don't play because they're injured or something. I mean, you think of the time not that long ago that Novak Djokovic was defaulted when he hit the linesperson. So I think that I don't think that there is an asterisk attached to this year, particularly when the fact is that there are so many other good players that are in the field. The reality with Djokovic is that he's won the Australian Open 9 times and he's got 20 Grand Slam win. So he's a big gun to have out of the field, and it's certainly an opportunity for somebody else. But there are still a lot of winners that are in that tournament, which will make it difficult for whoever it is to win. I mean, Zverev went out yesterday, which probably was a bit of a surprise. We'll talk to Craig about that.
We will.
But he was the number 3 seed, so it does leave, you know, Medvedev clearly now as the one to beat, but Nadal's still there. He would probably be the one in the top half now. Or in his half, that's the biggest name, I would say. Berrettini played very well last night. So yeah, I don't think it. I mean, Dominic Thiem and Novak Djokovic out does certainly give others more of an opportunity. But yeah, I just don't think it would be an asterisk.
Well, Fiz, Berrettini, Shapovalov, Nadal, the demon's coming. Demon gets through Jannik Sinner, and he, all of a sudden he's a quarterfinalist, and who knows what happens from there. Tsitsipas. Chilich.
Yeah, so Tsitsipas is there. Chilich has won the US Open. Medvedev's the reigning US Open. When I tell you the interesting one that's getting under the radar a little bit is Gael Monfils.
Gael Monfils.
Who's playing extremely well and extremely consistently, which isn't really something that he does.
Not really his template.
No, because he's been around forever. I mean, he's 35, but he looks playing
like he's
22. As a teenager. He does, but I remember watching him play way back when he first started playing, and it was like he wasn't meant to be on the court. He thought his legs were going to snap at any moment. And he was just this sort of bundle of energy. And he's always had, you know, the excitement part of his game, but has never had any sort of consistency. But it's almost like since he's been married, he's just settled down and he's playing much better tennis. He married Elena Svitolina, former number
Did
two
he?
Player in the world, yeah.
Well, maybe he's worked out it's better just being out of the house. You keep winning, you're out of the house for longer, and it causes less stress at home.
The other person that I want to talk to Craig about is in the women's side, where her family owned the Buffalo Bills. the NFL team that are playing today.
Oh, we have touched on this. Who is it?
She's still in the tournament. The name escapes me. I should remember that.
Not Pegula.
Yes, yes.
She's taking on Ash.
Yeah, her family owns the Buffalo Bills.
Let's get on.
So, yeah, very interesting.
Because they're going, they're still in the
action. They're playing today. Yeah, they're playing today. So,
What about our friends in Green Bay who had a moment yesterday in the snow at Lambeau Field? Your mate, Aaron.
That might be it for Aaron and the Green Bay Packers.
Do you think?
Yep. It was going to be the end for Aaron the last 2 years at the Green Bay Packers, but maybe this year, maybe what happened this time around, another loss in the playoffs at home. Admittedly, the conditions didn't necessarily suit Green Bay and Rodgers because of the snow. Now, you think they should be good in those conditions.
They're fairly consistent sort of conditions in Green
Bay. I know, but Rodgers is the thrower that, you know, to win, they probably need 4 touchdowns from him. It was a very low-scoring affair in the snow. But, yeah, it was a special teams error and then they gave back the ball, and then it all went pear-shaped, and in the end it was the 49ers, who themselves haven't been flash for a long time, got themselves over the line.
Yeah, great to have Joe Montana pull out the win there for San Francisco. I'm sure he's still quarterback, isn't he?
It's Jimmy Garoppolo.
Joe Montana. Is Jerry Rice still receiving? Mitch Wisnowski, Aussie punter.
Yes.
He's a part of the San Francisco team, so he was holding the ball for that last field goal.
Yep. He was.
So he did the job there for the boys. So that's a good little link for us from an Australian sporting perspective. So well done to Mitch and the crew there at San Francisco. What do we got today? We've got Buffalo at Kansas City, or Buffalo hosting Kansas City. I'm not sure how that works. And then we've got the Rams and taking on Tampa Bay. Your boy Tom, who everything seems to just be falling into place for Tom. Because now if they win this, they get home field advantage because of Green Bay's loss.
Mm.
So it's all coming up.
No, it's a big day. The Abu Dhabi Golf overnight also, it's worth mentioning, because it's just worth so much money. And it was Thomas Peters that ended up winning at 10 under. A one-shot winner from Cabrera Bello and also Sharma. But the other interesting part of this story was Tyrrell Hatton. So Tyrrell Hatton, who finished 3 shots behind the winner, in a tie for 6th. Unfortunately, it wasn't a tie for 5th, Daniel, but it was a tie for 6th.
We would have liked Victor Hovland to get the chocolates yesterday.
No, I needed Tyrrell. Anyway.
Victor would have been nice.
So Tyrrell's lost by 3 shots, and on the Friday on the last hole, he had a 7, which makes it a bit difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But on the Saturday on the final hole, he had a 9.
Why did he do that?
Because he kept hitting the ball in the water. So... Tyrrell's lost by 3 shots, and he lost 6 shots on the final hole on days 2 and 3.
Bad luck, Tyrrell.
That's called costly.
Not good enough as far as I'm concerned. Nice to see Adam Scott in some nice form. Oh, top 10 finish for Adam.
It was the same old story with Adam Scott. He hit the ball so well last night and just couldn't part. He had another different action that he was going with yesterday. And also, he's wearing
a beard.
A very healthy beard.
Yes. Yes, he's hirsute, is what he is. It's Adam Scott. But nice to see him playing some good golf again. What's the next one? There's another desert swing.
Dubai this week.
Oh, Dubai this
week.
Which
is the one that Lucas Herbert won a couple of years ago.
So that was one of the Rolex tournaments on the weekend. Thomas Peters with a win there. I've just worked out, too, I was watching that coverage last night, that one of my sister's former boyfriends is the caddy for Rafa Cabrera Bello.
Right.
I saw him on the third. That's Buddy Benny. Benny, little Benny, is now on the... Well, he's been there for a while. I didn't know this, but I didn't know who he's currently caddying for. But he's hanging on the bag of Rafa.
Well, there you go.
Nice little payday for Benny coming in second there with Cabrera Bello. But you're right, Dubai this week.
Where I am, and I don't have to move at all for the time being. All I have to do is try and bring my best on that given day to try and upset my opponent and do what I can to try and win that tennis match. It's just about going out there on that day, trying to give you the best that you can on that given day with the conditions, with all that's going on, and accepting that, having fun with it, enjoying it, and trying to beat your opponent one-on-one.
Ash Barty, she beats her opponent 1-on-1, 2-on-1 against, 3-on-1 against. I reckon she'd still win after her win against Amanda Anisimova, 6-4, 6-3 through to the quarterfinals of the women's draw. She is the highlight act, without a doubt. Well, maybe there is a doubt. Well, some doubles highlights have gathered some interest of recent days. Craig Gabriel always gathers interest when he walks through the corridors of power there at Melbourne Park. He's back again with us on a Monday morning. Good morning, Craig.
I'll get to walking through the powers of corridor there in a second, but that response from Ashley was in relation to a question that I put to her, was that, you know, many players talk about having to peak in the second week of a major as to where she is and how much she had to lift, and that was what she had to say.
Well, she's getting a lot of love at the moment, fair enough too, because she's playing with such great control and craft, Craig. And one thing I was reading with interest across the weekend was about her preparation and her team's preparation. She talks about we all the time.
Yeah.
Not me in that situation. Her team's preparation and the way they scout their opponent and know the strengths of their opponent so well, and they take weapons away from their opponents, which enforces and enhances Ash's strengths.
Well, there's no doubt about it, and a lot of what they do now, and a lot of most of the players, in fact, do, is scout their opposition on YouTube. They go into looking for videos on how a player has played a particular match or the round before, or you know how they would play somebody that might be very much like themselves. So that's one way, and then obviously there's nothing to beat actually seeing things in person. So Craig Tizer, Ash's coach, will go scouting with another member of the team, maybe. So that's what they do, and they would keep a log and books of records of how, if they played the person before, what happened in that match, what have they done, etc., that could be different or the same, and all that. So, you know, a lot of the teams do that, but I would say Ash's group is probably amongst the most professional.
And we know that you're hot when Rod Laver starts talking about you. It's been Roger for years at the Australian Open. Now Rod's all over Ash, so this is a good sign.
Yeah, look, Rod is pretty amazing. He's such an incredible individual. He's so across it all. You know, he's spoken about Ash. He's spoken about Alex Dimonor, you know, the other Australians. But he's got his finger on the pulse. It's difficult for him. He's so much older now, but he still takes an incredible interest in what's happening with the Australian tennis players.
Oh, I think it's an interesting point with Ash, though, about this peaking thing, because, I mean, clearly she's playing extremely well, and last night was just so professional in the way she went about it. But it is rare for someone to go and win the lead-up event and then go and win the next Grand Slam event. I mean, we're just going to look at Thanasi Kokkinakis as an example of that. But, you know, she's on a bit of a streak now.
Well, you know, I think there's a bit of a difference. Thanasi did it the week immediately before the Australian Open, and it's the first time he's won a title. So
yes. Oh, it's definitely different. Around,
it's been a patchy career for him because of injuries. So that was he was on such a high after that, but he suffered a letdown when he played Kupfner in the first round of the Australian Open. So, but with Ash, she won Adelaide, was supposed to play Sydney, and withdrew from Sydney. So I gave her that week because so many, in fact, I would say the vast majority of the top players don't like playing the week immediately before a major. Yeah. They like to take that off to just sort of get a bit of time to themselves and go through practice sessions and workouts and stuff like that. So that's what Ash did, and she's used to winning. So there's a big difference.
So when you look at the women's draw at the moment, obviously Osaka is out, and Ash didn't have to play her in the end. Who is the other couple of players that are kind of going under the radar because everyone's kind of thinking that Ash is just going to go all the way?
Well, you know, I think on her side of the draw, you know, not much would have been written about Jessica Pegula or Madison Keys, but, you know, still competent players because they're not as prominent as names. As far as going under the radar, to a degree, I would say somebody like Iga Swiatek on the other side of the draw has been going a bit under the radar. You know, she is the seventh seed. She's a winner of a major and an incredible player. So that's if it comes down to that, I would say her. Maybe even Simona Halep, because Simo, her ranking has slipped for because of injuries and things like that, but she's still seeded 14. But certainly in Australia, all the attention is on Ash, so a lot of other players might just slowly, quietly go about their business.
Sabalenka's involved today in selection.
That's if she serves. Goodness gracious.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you.
It's a nightmare.
She's having some challenges at this phase of the tournament when there's a bit more pressure on. Does that just go even further to water?
You know, she's got Kaia Kanepi. Now, Kanepi
the giant killer.
Is a slouch on a tennis court. Sabalenka, I don't know how much she can afford to be losing these first sets. Every single match she's played, she's lost the first set. And has scrambled to come back. I don't know if she's going to get that opportunity against Kanepi if she's able to come back, if she loses the first set and maybe goes down a break or starts with the double faults again. Yeah, after her last match, she said she was quite pleased with her serve, because she only serves 10 double faults.
just the 10. That game is the second one on the evening session of Rod Laver Arena today. Kanepi and Sabalenka. In the men's division, we had some interesting results across the weekend. None more so than yesterday, I don't think, where our man Dennis, not too many Dennises under 30 these days, took out Alexander Zverev. A big result. The number 3 said gone.
Yeah, gone. What a menace Dennis is. Shapovalov, lefty. He can be such a troublesome player. I thought he might have kicked on a bit more by now, although Rafa was saying that he still feels that Shapovalov is somebody who can win multiple majors. We'll see. But that was a big win yesterday because Zverev has been playing extraordinarily well, and he was handled extraordinarily well, 6-3, 7-6, 6-3.
Yeah, so how much of that was just terrific tennis, or was Zverev off? Because he can...
Sorry, guys. Yeah. I think you know why I'm coughing, but we'll get to that later. I think Shapovalov was really on the ball.
Yeah. No, that was an impressive win. Rafa also won. I kind of feel like he's going under the radar a little bit.
Yeah. Are you okay, Craig? Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'll get through.
This is one of the most courageous reports we've ever had.
Absolutely.
On this program. But yeah, do you feel that Nadal is going under the radar?
No, I don't think so. Okay. You know, he was solid against Mannarino. I mean, that first set tiebreak, if you saw it, that was incredible. 16-14, both had set points. And Mannarino, I think, had about 3 or 4. And then Rafa closed on his 7th set point. But there was some unbelievable tennis. And then he got that under his belt. And it was 6-2, 6-2 after that. But I don't think he's going under the radar because there's still been plenty of attention on him. Every time he plays, people are there. And he's spoken to after every single match. Whereas a lot of some of the players, like Shapovalov, I don't think he's been, you know, he's hardly had any big media conferences or anything like that.
Dean Vickerman's with us on the line. He's the coach of Melbourne United, and I want to talk to him. We'll get back to the garbage later on. Dean, good morning.
Good morning.
Apologies for the garbage. It happens sometimes around here. How are you feeling after the weekend's performance against the 36ers? It seemed, from what I saw, I didn't see all of it, Dean, but I saw a good chunk of it, pretty emphatic.
Yeah, a little bit of a slow start. But then, yeah, I thought our bench was fantastic. They really came in and gave us a great energy, and you know, this team's been really good at, if someone's got a little bit of foul trouble or someone's down a little bit on form, you know, the next guy's really picking it up. So you know, I thought we saw Brad Newley come in and have one of his better games of the year, going back to Adelaide, and Ariel Huckporty, Shay Illy. Yeah, I thought some of those guys coming off the bench were fantastic.
Is that one of the keys to the squad? I mean, you talked about this last year, I reckon, when we were talking to you about the campaign, and the depth was always going to be the thing that wins you or loses you the title. Is that the same with this squad? Because it has changed a fair bit.
Yeah, I think, you know, this season where, you know, everyone's lost a few games with COVID, and so the schedule gets a little bit more condensed and games come a little bit quicker. And certainly when that happens, I think, you know, the depth of your squad becomes, you know, even more important.
And does that make it even more remarkable that you're on this winning sequence, considering the stop-start nature of the league, the uncertainty of the league, that you have got this level of consistency?
Yeah, probably the you know, the part that's it's been on the road. You know, we've just had five on the road, and you know, we've got another three to go before we get a home game. And so, yeah, being, you know, really consistent and putting ourselves in good winning positions on the road has been a, you know, really pleasing element.
And the performance of your skipper, Chris Golding, who last year you were very open about his game time and his role in the team. He seems to be commanding more time on the court this year from a leadership perspective, but also obviously a scoring perspective. Is that by design, or is that just the way things are unfolding at the moment?
No, he's become even more important to us this year. In, you know, when we put the team together, we knew we were going to be a good defensive team, but probably, you know, lacked a little bit of shooting, and having one of the best shooters in the league play a little bit more for this team right now is certainly where we needed to go. And, you know, we've talked to him about shooting 10 great threes a game. You know, I quickly grabbed him after the game in Adelaide, shot 12 threes. What'd you think? He's like, yep, I think I got 10 out of 12. That were great ones. And if he can keep spacing the floor for us and making that at a high percentage, it's a challenge for defences.
It's obviously the first time we've spoken to you since our summer break, so it's, a chance to ask you the state of the league at the moment. Obviously, you are going to be one of the teams to beat, if not the team to beat, but who are the other teams that you're worried about at this point in the season?
Yeah, it's so early. You know, we saw Sydney on the weekend, you know, get blown out in Brisbane and lose Xavier Cooks through the game, who's a big part of them, and then bounce back and, you know, and win by 20 or 25 or whatever it was the other night. And so, you know, they just haven't got their group healthy yet. You know, you look at South East Melbourne, they've just brought in another import. They'll go through a little phase of, you know, with him and how they create unbelievable depth in that squad. You know, Perth took a tough loss and then go to Wollongong and get a great win. Wollongong are great. You know, there's so many teams that are super talented, and with the three import rule and the next star rule, you know, everybody's got a lot of talent on their team. How they deal with injuries, how they deal with what else is going on in the world through this period, you know, is pretty important. But when we get back to normality and start playing home games with full crowds, you know, it's going to be the same as the last 5 or 6 years, where, you know, the last spot for a playoff position is going to be hotly contested.
It was some sort of season for the Melbourne Football Club in the men's competition, the AFL Premiers, and funnily enough, not in front of their faithful at the MCC, all the way over in the West. I don't think, in the end, it was a great concern to the Football Club, and Kate Roffey is the president of the Football Club, and she would have been very, very happy just to hoist that cup aloft. She joins us on the line to review and preview, I suppose, the season 2022 coming up. Kate, good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us. Are you still sort of basking in the afterglow, or you moved on?
Oh, look, we're still getting on with business. We're in the middle of an AFLW season now. We've got another AFL season to get prepared for. So, yeah, people often ask, you know, have you come down yet? But we sort of, I think, got straight back into it and said, right, what's next? So, I don't really think, people often ask me, so I don't really think I'll understand what we've done until, you know, I've finished my time as president and I'm sitting there one day and going, gee, what an extraordinary time that was.
It was an extraordinary time watching it without any emotional attachment, I can tell you. So when you get a chance to breathe and look at it, I think you'll enjoy what happened. And it's the combination of 8 years or a long time of rebuilding the club. You've spoken about this before. There must have been an enormous amount of satisfaction to see what was unfolding and then ultimately that Premiership Cup.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary journey. I think that's, you know, part of the thing is that people sort of go, oh, what happened this year? And it's not this year, it's not me, it's not any one of us. It's such a long journey and so many people put, you know, all their time and effort into getting there. And it really is, we went right back, you know, I've been on the board it's coming on for 9 years now, I guess, but we went right back at that time and said, right, it's got to be an absolute rebuild. And we build ourselves to set ourselves up for sustained success. And we didn't know when that year would come. And, you know, it started in 2021 and we hope it keeps going forward. But it really was a long journey. And just to see, you know, one of the greatest things that gives me joy is I was at the tennis the other night, and someone just came up. She was from WA, but she said, I was in West Australia for the grand final. I was a Carlton supporter, but you came over to the fence after everyone had gone and had selfies with us. I've now bought a Melbourne membership. And it's things like that, the joy that people actually get from what the club has done, that really, you know, any day you sit there and you think, oh, there's a lot to do, you know, that really makes it all worthwhile.
I'm not sure what was more impressive, the team and how well they played, or the way that you've celebrated the premiership with the fans. And the amount of photographs or social media, whatever, content of your fans with the cup and just the... I don't know, you've just shared it so well with the fans. How did you plan that? And is there any one person that's responsible for making it such a special thing for the fans, not just winning it, but celebrating with them?
No, I think all clubs are different. All clubs, like all players and people, have their own personality, and ours is very much a people club. And when we were, Gary Pert, our CEO, and I were sitting over in Perth after the match, and we were just in the change rooms by ourselves. Everyone else was out on the field, and we just said that so many people had picked the cup up and had been dropped and dinged already, and we said it's the people's cup. We don't want to put it in a cupboard and just have it so that people who walk into the boardroom can see it. We want everyone who's a Melbourne supporter, and a lot of people who aren't Melbourne supporters as well, we want them all to be able to touch it. People don't get to touch a premiership cup. You know, there is only one. People say, how many of you got it? You know, are there three or four of the cups? I was like, there's only one, and it's the one that goes around everywhere, and we want everyone to have a photo. We don't make people put gloves on it, and people shouldn't have to put gloves on. It's as much every supporter's cup as it is, you know, anyone who's played in the team or anyone who's worked for the club. So, you know, we really have that ethos of everybody gets to touch it. And people ask me all the time, can you come to a lunch and bring the cup? I'm like, I can't even get hold of the cup. She's out and about doing her own thing. She's got her own diary.
But that, I mean, I've got two questions I want to ask you about that. And firstly, that is one of the questions. How have you organised it the way you have? Because I got a text from a friend the other day with a picture with the cup.
Mm.
And I'm like, how does this happen? How do you... Because it's pretty busy, the cup.
Yeah, she is very busy. Yeah, it has a diary. And if I do, I've had a couple of nights here so friends and family can enjoy it. And I've had it, you know, for a couple of big lunches that I've been to. And I ring up, like everybody else at the club, I ring up and say, is the cup available on XYZ day? So I've booked it for, I think, a day in March this year to take to a dinner. And it has its own diary. And we say, no, sorry, it's in Sydney, or it's heading over to South Australia, or it's down in Bairnsdale, or over in Geelong. It has, seriously, she has been everywhere, one of the best travelled cups that you'll ever find, I think. And we have staff who take the cup. You know, it's virtually a couple of our staff have been on the road with the cup, you know, pretty much since the grand final. So we've made sure, you know, every player has had an opportunity to take it home for a night and share it with their family and friends and staff members. And then we get it out as much as we can to lunches, to dinners, to everywhere, so that, like you said, people can come and just pick it up and have a photo with it. It's an extraordinary thing to be standing there and have, you know, 90-year-old men coming up and touching the cup and bursting into tears. It really does mean that much to people.
Sorry, the cup's not available today. She's having a facial and a massage. Available after 11.
She needs a good glam.
Yeah, that's all right.
She needs a facial.
So the last part of that discussion is, do you think you would have still done it had you won it in Melbourne and not in Perth? Is it something that sort of organically happened, that because your fans missed out, or so many of them missed out, that it was a way of sharing it, or would have you done it anyway?
No, we would have anyway. I mean, there's a limited number of people who can get into the MCG for grand final day.
Yeah,
here.
True.
So, we would have done it irrespective, and I think we would have had as many people. We had 37,000 people turn up to watch a replay of the match, and we did that because we thought it wasn't here in Melbourne, and let's let our fans come and see it. But I think Melbourne, being as Melbourne is, I think we could have one in at the MCG, and we could have replayed it, and we still would have had those people turn up. That was an extraordinary day. We weren't quite sure how that would go, but it was people are, you know, still talking about it. And those who said, oh, you know, I can watch it on the telly, and didn't go, are kicking themselves now, because everyone who went there, it was just such a great atmosphere. It really was quite an unbelievable day.
So with all the expectation now going into 2022 and beyond from the men's perspective, does it create anxiety or confidence that you've done it before?
Neither, I think. It creates a knowledge that we've done the hard work and we know what you have to do. I think it's always when you've won a first grand final, you know, when it's first won in 57 years, you certainly have got the monkey off your back a bit, but you know what needs to happen. And I think, you know, the extraordinary thing when I look at the team, and I'm sure, like many other people, we've all watched that, at least that 15 minutes of play, like 100 times. It is, irrespective of whether you're a Melbourne supporter or not, some of the most extraordinary football you'll ever see, some of the most extraordinary sport you'll ever see. They know that they can do it. And I think there's one thing about thinking, yes, we can do this, and actually knowing out on the field that you can do it. And I think the belief amongst the coaching group, the playing group, the supporters, the staff, that's a different thing, I think. This year, as Maxi Gawn said at our best and fairest, these things aren't easy to win. Just because you've won one by, you know, a big margin doesn't mean you're going to come through and win another one. There's a lot of work to do, and they're extraordinarily long seasons and difficult things. We'll have COVID impacts. We're seeing that with our women's group already. You know, all sorts of things happen. You need a good deep list. You need a good culture. You need a bit of luck, with the bounce of the ball, a bit of luck with the umpire's call to... All those things need to go together to win you a premiership. But we're putting ourselves in the best position that we can to have sustained success. And, you know, we expect that will bring us a lot more finals. Whether it brings that ultimate premiership prize it remains to be seen. But we're certainly in as good a position as we can be, we think.
From a sports science perspective, which is your background, are they unconsciously competent, these Melbourne footballers?
Absolutely. And, you know, you see... someone like a Cozzy Pickett, who's, you know, an extraordinary talent. People say, oh, you know, he's so great. And Cozzy's able to be that great because the people around him, or the players around him who've been playing for so many more years, are in that real unconsciously competent space. And it lets you be as good as you can with your flair and your dare because you get those opportunities. And I think, you know, we've still got some players who are young and they won't be in that sports science unconsciously competent state, but we've got plenty who are, and they all go together to make all the players out on the field be able to know their role, play their role, and look as good as they do. And it's a really, you know, it's quite an extraordinary and exciting thing to have such a young team. We're still one of the second or third youngest teams out there on the field each week. So that's exciting when you look at the structure of the group that we've got. To see them and think that they're going to play together probably for another 5, 6, 7 years, it's a pretty exciting time for Melbourne Football Club.
Dave Hussey is one of our very dear friends around these parts, and he's a coach of the Melbourne Stars, and what's been, I imagine, a very, very challenging Big Bash campaign, leading a team that's been dealing with so much uncertainty and change, I suppose, through the campaign. I want to talk to him about it. Dave Hussey joins us on the line this morning. Good morning, Huss.
Morning, Huss. How are you?
I'm going very well. Are you almost relieved that it's over?
No, I'm still sulking, actually. I still believe that we're one of the best teams in the competition and could rival the Sixers or the Scorchers to be the champions this year.
So with that being said, upon reflection, when you're doing your reviews and stuff, how do you analyse the season that's just gone for the Stars?
Yeah, it's a really difficult one. I thought we were just starting to play our best cricket after we beat the Heat up north just after the Christmas break and come back down south to Melbourne, and I thought we're just hitting our straps, and then all of a sudden... Armageddon hit, and we had to field a replacement team for a couple of games. And that stalled all our momentum, and unfortunately, we couldn't get back on a run towards the back end. And we relied on other teams to get us over the line, but unfortunately, we finished just out of the final five.
So, how did you handle that? What was your strategy to keep the energy up, to keep the vibe up, to try and make the best of that situation, Huss? Because it was bordering on impossible when you haven't got the calibre of players out there that you need and all your stars are gone. How did you handle that from a team management perspective?
Yeah, so I listened to Dean Vixenman before, and you're not focusing a lot on yourself and the team and individuals. I did so many one-on-one meetings with all the players, just trying to get themselves up and get the mood and up around the group. And yeah, it was just a really difficult one. I think strategy almost went out the window playing against opposition teams and just really focused on ourselves and what we can do, what we can control in order to play our best cricket. And I still thought we played pretty good cricket up until the back end when all our players were back fit and healthy, but unfortunately just wasn't enough to fulfil the final five.
So you had two things going against you. Virtually your entire team got COVID, and then there was the mental challenge of trying to get them back up with all the things that had gone against you. What was the hardest part? To get them up physically or mentally?
No, mentally. Physically, it was a case-by-case basis, as in I felt fine the whole way through. So after contracting COVID, but other players like Stoinis, Clint Hinchliffe, they were really battling, Joe Burns as well. They'd go out for a little bit of a net. They start the net and their heart rate would go to 180 straight away. So end up walking a lap and they couldn't really complete a lap. So it was a case-by-case basis. But full credit for all the boys. They all really wanted a place for the stars and they wanted to get themselves up for each game. But the schedule that we had at the back end was just really took its toll on the players. And unfortunately, we finished just out of the final five.
So how do you review it now? Because of the circumstances of it all, do you just throw it all in the bin and just start again next year, or are there still things that you can take out of it to make sure you're better next year?
No, there's many learnings from this year. Like we started very, very slowly this year. We had a lot of players injured, a lot of players not really ready to go. So with 5-day preparation to lead into a big tournament, it's just clearly not enough. So I've really got to touch base with players a lot earlier and get them on the same page earlier so they know what they're doing and just pray that I don't walk under a ladder or see a black cat and we don't get any injuries at the start of the season. Then we get our best team available, and I think that'll go a long way for us to qualify for the finals personally, but also play Stars cricket, which is an entertaining and impressive game of cricket.
One player that was one of the real shining lights was Joe Clark. After a horrific start, he became one of the great players of the competition this year with his timing of the cricket ball was sublime. Did you see this coming? Obviously, you selected him, so you thought he could do something, but did he exceed expectations?
I wouldn't have said he exceeded expectations, but let's just say after the first four games, I was getting a lot of people messaging me and calling me saying that he's a dud, but he's got a hot place. He's a class player. He's been a class player for a number of years for Notts, and you just know he's going to find some form eventually. Australia is a very difficult place to play. Come in from a cold climate, come to Australia, different pitches, and then all of a sudden you're facing the best bowlers in the world on a pretty big stage. And yeah, you're not going to score runs in every game, but if you can contribute to, say, four or five wins, it goes a long way to actually qualifying for the finals. And I think Joe was really shining a light along with Dylan Cartwright with the bat this year for the Stars.
Was it handled as well as it could have been, considering what happened, Huss, and how challenging it is for everyone? Was it handled the right way to just keep barging through and keep playing, or would you have liked a bit of a hiatus for teams to get healthy again and then start the competition again?
Yeah, probably more the latter. I would have liked a 7-day break. However, I fully understand that there's schedule commitments and there was meant to be a New Zealand tournament coming up, or New Zealand tour coming up, I should say. So I fully get that there's TV, there's pressures from TV and there's pressures from scheduling from grounds who have already penciled in fixtures. So I do understand all the pressures involved, but I still thought players' health and well-being was paramount, and I don't think that was shown enough gratitude there throughout the year.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Do you think it's as engaging a product as it once was, the Big Bash? I mean, different this year with... There's a bit of a caveat in this conversation because of what's happened this year and the fixturing of games just to get them through at different times and different venues and all that sort of stuff. But do you think it's as engaging as it once was, the Big Bash, for the fans? He's stumped by this. It's a really good question.
It is. It's just a pause.
It's just a really good question, and he's intimidated by it. It's just not unusual. With my questioning, and he
just
can't
deep
feel like he can answer it. we clearly don't know what's happened there. He's just fallen off there. We'll try and get him back up because, as you rightly say, it's a great question.
It's a very good question. I'm interested in the answer.
So am I. So the coon dog at the back is doing his thing to get him back on the line, but that's a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, he's got him.
He's got him.
He's got him.
Look at him. What a machine the coon dog is.
I tell you what.
There's nothing he can't do.
He's an inspiring man. This last week has been extraordinary.
There's nothing he can't do. Hussie with us?
Yes, I am. Sorry about that. I'm not sure what happened.
That's all right. Did you hear my question?
I did, and the way I'll answer that is that the Stars want to entertain, so we're trying to entertain all our fans, all our members, but not only that, but all the cricketing world. So has it lost its luster, the BBL? Possibly a little bit, but we're trying to play a brand of cricket that really encourages all people to play the game of cricket, but also support the Stars. And I think that showed in the last game where we scored 270 and just made a mockery of some of the bowling that was.
So to the extension of that, Huss, the X factor, ticker across.
Cross.
Surge, ticker across.
Tick. I like that, Surge. Yep.
Yeah, I like the Surge.
Surge is good. No,
I'm surprised there's been anti-Surge. I think that's a really good dynamic.
I'm with the Surge.
Yeah. I'm not even going to ask you about the bonus, boosh, bash, boosh, bow bonus point thing. Because that is, in my view, an absolute disgrace.
Well, you've got to ask David.
Okay, sorry. The bash boost point, tick or cross?
No, cross, because purely, and not because of this year, because last year the Stars would have made the finals, winning less games than I can't remember the team we're going to go ahead of, purely because of bash points, and then happened the reverse way around. So we would have got into the finals. Sorry, the Strikers got in ahead of us in the finals because of purely bash points, so which I don't think is the right way to go about playing the game. It's too much of an incentive. 1 point, that's 24% of the win. It's just too valuable.
Yeah, you don't win a game after 10 overs. You win a game at the end of the game.
And so by that, we've got one of the three initiatives.
Yeah, no, I'm with us on those three. And yep. then probably the other one is just the length of the competition. We're seeing at the moment, Andre Russell, who played for your team, is playing in some other competition somewhere in the world at the moment, wearing pink pads. Is it too long, or do we have to up the salary cap to keep the players longer? What do we have to do to keep the better players coming here?
No, the competition's too long. It just needs to be condensed. I'm still all for the 14 games, but take the games to regional areas. Take the game to Albury and Wodonga and the Stars play the Sydney Thunder down there, or go out to Maui and play out there. It's a beautiful stadium out there as well. So, but only play four games at the MCG, so then the fans actually get to the MCG and really make the most of that experience of going to the MCG and watching the Stars play. But also condense the tournament. So it is a 5-week tournament. Play three games a week if you have to. And, purely because you need the TV dollars to filter down all the way to grassroots cricket. And that's where we're all passionate about. We want the game to continue growing. And you always want to leave the game better than what you started with.
Let's continue that conversation about cricket and the Big Bash, because we have a representative from the best team in the Big Bash. Colin Munro joins us from the Perth Scorchers, who are through to the final this Friday night at Marvel Stadium. Colin, good morning.
Good morning. How you going?
We are well, mate. How are you going? Through to another grand final. Got a chance to just sit back and rest for a week and watch all the other teams go hard at each other. How do you play this week?
Yeah, it's a tough one, to be honest, because you want to be playing and keep playing, but, you know, the whole week off. So a few days off, to be honest. Yesterday off. Big session on Tuesday, and then Wednesday off, and we have a light session on Thursday. So not much changes compared to our usual preparation for a game. You know, a couple of days out, we'll have a big session, and then the top ups just before, and then hopefully we're all ready for the game.
We spoke to Adam Voges, the coach, last Friday morning. I think it might have been before the final, and you put on a bit of a clinic in that game. Did it go to plan, or was it probably better than expected?
I think it was better than expected, to be fair. I think on a very used wicket, our openers, Ingo and KP, batted exceptionally well and, you know, sort of just blew them out the park. And then our bowlers were outstanding on a tricky wicket. So, yeah, it was pretty much a performance, to be honest. I think every time you score, you know, 190 on a wicket that we probably thought 160 was going to be a good score on, you know, it was very, very tough for them to try and get any momentum in the innings to try and chase it down.
How good is it knowing, Colin, you've got so many different players that can win a game for you? I mean, you've got so many different contributors, both with the bat and the ball, such a balanced lineup. It almost feels bulletproof.
Yeah, it's awesome to be a part of a squad that can, you know, anybody that can step on the park, whether they've been on the bench or not, can step up and actually win a game or contribute to a game. So sometimes if you're not too sure on how to go about the innings or whatever out in the middle, and you're thinking, oh, it's a bit slow, then you just go hard and take the positive option and be aggressive, because you know people behind you can come in and do the job as well. So yes, it's awesome to be a part of the squad that, you know, everyone can win a game.
Because you guys haven't had or haven't been without your challenges either. I mean, you've had the players that have been missing because of international duties, and then COVID struck your team as well, including yourself. Firstly, yes. How did you come through that? Do you feel like you're back near your best, health-wise?
Yeah, I think so. I've never been the fittest bloke on the planet, so it didn't really affect me that much, to be fair. I think, obviously, having a booster shot just before Christmas really gave me that extra bit of immunity, I reckon. I got sick for about 24 hours. I was just a little bit achy and sore and a bit of a sore throat, but that was about it, to be honest. So very lucky that sort of got through it without getting sick, real sick. And then, yeah, we have, as a team, we played one home game, and that was the first game of our tournament, and then we've been on the road ever since, so it's really been tough. Some of the guys haven't seen, friends and family for that amount of time, but we have had a few families with us and girlfriends and wives and partners, so it's been really cool to sort of get to know them as well, and we spent a fair bit of time together when we were allowed, and then only now we're sort of in groups of two or three, so... yes, it's been challenging, but I don't think we're the only team that sort of faced those challenges as well. So I think all the players in the Big Bash have to, take your hats off to them to finish the tournament like we have.
Yeah, absolutely. We talk often about momentum in T20 cricket, and no better evidence of that with the Strikers going on a bit of a sort of a late season run. But for you personally, keeping momentum rolling, you had such a great little phase there where you got 100 and you were batting so well, you get COVID, then some of the other players come back and take your spot higher in the order. How do you keep your momentum rolling?
Yeah, I was going to bat at four when Ingo came back as well. So it is tough when you haven't played in those three games, especially when you're looking and you're playing at the Adelaide Oval, at Geelong, and they both look like unbelievable batting wickets too, so you miss out on,
yep,
on hopefully, you know, what would have been a good score for yourself and the team. So, but yeah, for me at my age, it's about I'm mentally prepared more than physically these days. So it's about doing all those little things, and if I do that well, then it just allows me to enjoy the game too. If I'm too worried about the results, then then my process and all that stuff goes out the window too. So for me, it's just about trying to stay in the now, in the present, and just trying to do my routine as best I can.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.